From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. 1 year ago, we brought you interviews with businesses, labs, and regulators as Oregon launched its bold experiment in legalizing psilocybin services, the first in the nation. Now, this fledgling industry has evolved from startup to somewhat normalized operations. It's still expensive, it still requires long wait times, but it has now taken its place alongside every other industry throughout Oregon and is offering services to residents and clientele from other states and even other nations. Today on the show, we check in with the very first psilocybin service center to receive a license in the state and find out how it's going. In many ways, it's been a long, strange trip, but this nascent trade is finding its footing. We'll also get an update from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife about poison shellfish off our coast. All that's ahead on Oregon on the Record. Epic Healing Eugene made history as the first psilocybin center to get its license from the state of Oregon to begin offering legal magic mushroom services to clients. Today, you'll hear about the challenges, learnings, and optimistic signs for one of our state's newest and most unique industries. Kathy Jonas, the founder, CEO, and lead facilitator for Epic Healing Eugene, really appreciate you coming on and talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So you were the first, as I understand it, the first center of this kind to be licensed in Oregon. And really, my first question is, tell us how it's been going.
Well, I'd say that overall, it has gone really well. It has, you know, we're really small, so it's always tempting to try to go and grow beyond what you are.
Sure.
And, you know, it's like, how big do we get? Well, we're really small. Mm-hmm. So we've tried to grow in other ways. And okay. It's really in quality, focusing on quality, seeing what's important to us. We focus on delivery of very high, meaningful quality service, trying to get really great people to work for us, for mm-hmm. other, you know, our facilitators, making sure that they're supported and have good training, and partnering with our other facilities that we work with. We're renting space at some other service centers in Oregon, mm-hmm. so we can serve more people on our wait list. And so we've just been really trying to figure out how can we expand yet really not overextend ourselves.
Sure. You know, many industries all up and down, you know, the spectrum have talked about the challenge of finding quality employees. How has it been for you? Have you been able to find and staff up the ways that you need to?
I think we're really fortunate that for, you know, some different reasons that we attract people that want to really help people in deep, meaningful ways in supporting their transformation. And so we've been really fortunate. We have really great facilitators.
Okay. What are some, maybe if you could, sort of looking back, what have been some of the hurdles or challenges that you've had to overcome in this very, you know, new industry and this first year of being open?
I think that the challenges, of course, are accessibility and wanting to help the many and being under the limitations of what we could do financially. Mm-hmm. And so what we've focused on is developing our Pay It Forward Fund. And so we've contributed 5% of our revenue since we opened to services, and we're able to help more and more people now as we've been able to get going. But that was certainly hard to maneuver, having our price structure set high enough that we could make it, mm-hmm. and at the same time is now we're finally in a place that we can share and serve more people, so that's positive.
Yeah. Well, and certainly I think almost anything new, you know, oftentimes starts out at perhaps a higher price point than it may ultimately sort of settle into. Do you think that's probably the case for not only yourself, but perhaps the industry in general?
I would say that that would be the logical thing that will happen. What we've decided to do with just our existing infrastructure is, you know, in order to retain and attract really good facilitators that want to be with us and grow with us, they have to be paid well. So we, you know, we have, you know, over 70% of our of what we're making goes out for staffing.
So
that's a chunk.
Yeah.
But we have really great people and we're doing really good service. And then we're expanding. We're offering retreats now. And so we're really excited about how creative we've been able to be.
Yeah. Any surprises that you've encountered along the way, positive or negative, just things that maybe you didn't anticipate and then something happened, you're like, wow, that came out of left field, but you know, it's something that we've dealt with?
Well, I would say one of the things that I've made a philosophy is always trying to learn.
Mm-hmm.
What can I learn from this session? What can I learn from this experience? So I think that, you know, everybody is unique. Everybody comes in with a different situation. What we've learned is how important preparation and integration is.
Hmm.
And so you can't get enough preparation and you can't get enough integration, really.
Wow.
So what we've done is part of really focusing on quality is we offer a preparation group every month for anybody signed up with us. And now we're offering two integration groups a month for anybody that completed a session with us. Mm. And that's in addition to all the individual services that we also offer.
Okay. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to the founder, CEO, and lead facilitator for Epic Healing, Eugene. And we're talking about the first year of offering legal psilocybin services in Oregon. Talk a little bit about, just in general terms, the clientele. Is there a way to kind of say this is sort of the demographic of who's visiting our services? Is it a certain age group or you tell me what does it kind of look like?
Well, I would say not to the phrase that a little description that is coming to me is kind of older hippies.
Okay.
that I haven't used.
I guess
really
we have a few
time.
Of those in our community.
Well, and also it's nationwide.
Sure.
And we also get people internationally that come as well.
Yeah.
And, but it's kind of some people that have not used psychedelics for a really long time, like 30, 40 years.
Sure.
And so we do get an older population. We also get, you know, all ranges, you know, as long as, you know, the youngest is 21. We mm-hmm. don't get very many people in their 20s. It seems like it's more like 40s, 50s and up.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And you and I have spoken before, and oftentimes people who seek it out, oftentimes, or maybe not oftentimes, but certainly one of the reasons that people seek out psilocybin treatment is things like PTSD and depression. Is that
sure.
also certainly something that you're seeing in terms of people availing themselves?
I would say, yeah, the majority of people that I work with that have had a lot of trauma in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, a lot of childhood trauma is very common. And of course, depression and anxiety. And, you know, we get some people with OCD and we have people that are more of trying to make some relationship changes with themselves as they, you know, face end of life care as far as like, you know, how do I want to carry this feeling that I have for so long that I'm not enough. You know, that is one of the core, I think, woundings that so many people carry, of not feeling that they're enough. Hmm. And that's something that a lot of people get, you know, some help with, you know.
Yeah.
And there is, though, I'd say, in that learning of, and why the whole preparation process is so important, is a lot of people will hear the research or they'll see documentaries and they'll kind of think that it's easy to just be at the other side of the whole experience. We'll take this psilocybin and that's going to give me this. But there's a whole path. It is like psilocybin's kind of like shows you the door and even opens it for you, but mm-hmm. you're the one that has to walk through it. Hmm. And you're the one that has to go into this new way of potentially having insights of improving your life. And you're the one that needs to, you know, get some traction. We certainly try to help with that. And we do a lot of coaching and we give, you know, we have lots of helpful hints, but it is a person's readiness to be able to go and be with themselves in a new way.
Sure. Sure.
You know,
you mentioned something earlier. I want to kind of talk about this a little bit, that, you know, international clientele who's come to avail themselves to your services. And I'm wondering too, you know, because Oregon was the first and it's still a very new industry, and certainly many states it's still illegal. And even some communities in our state have chosen not to make it legal. I'm wondering, do you get a lot of people coming in from other states? Do you also just simply get inquiries from people who either A, are curious about the services, or are you getting, you know, people who want to perhaps emulate it if it becomes legal in the state they live in?
All of the above.
Okay. Yeah.
That is true. You know, we have people come to have an experience that maybe they're planning on opening up a whatever it's going to be called, mm-hmm. whether it's called a service center in another state, who knows what it's going to be called. But, you know, that we have people that are trying to get a sampling and learn as much as they can.
Yeah.
And we also, you know, have people that they were going to go maybe to Jamaica and they decided to come to us in Oregon, you know.
So it could even be possibly couched as...
It could be, but you know what? You know, for this kind of psychedelic experience mm-hmm. with psilocybin, I've often said this, it's not for the faint of heart.
Sure.
I mean, there's a lot of crying, emoting, can be associated with purging. Purging is like, it can be a physical sensation mm-hmm. Of release, kind of like imagine all that angst inside that some people carry, and having you have an opportunity to kind of like purge it out in some form through crying or spitting or sounds or shaking. And so there's a lot of things that happen during a psilocybin experience if a person can relax into it. And that's why, you know, some of these experiences with plant medicines, you know, ayahuasca or psilocybin is described to be similar to 10 years of psychotherapy or something like that. So imagine if you were in a psychotherapist's office and you're having this big cry and you're able to release things. Well, when you're on, you know, psilocybin, it can be really magnified.
Sure.
And it's like, it's not... Not everybody's ready to have that experience, you know, and then it's a lot to unpack, to remember and to figure out all what happened. That's why that integration process is so important. That's why we offer our 2 free groups a month to support people.
Yeah. Marie, introduce you to the audience. We're talking to the founder and CEO and lead facilitator of Epic Healing, Eugene, Kathy Jonas. I think you mentioned earlier a little bit about wait lists, and I guess I wanted to ask you sort mm-hmm. of what your message would be to people who want to avail themselves of the services, and if mm-hmm. there is a wait list, kind of what's your recommendation for people who haven't tried it or maybe want to repeat an experience? Kind of what's your guidance for folks? You've talked a lot about making, you know, saying it's not necessarily for everybody. You really need to think about it, but I was just wondering some of the practical mm-hmm. matters that you might want to yeah. let people know about.
Yeah, we historically, because of us being first out, you know, we have a really large wait list, but now we have a really, you know, refined intake team mm-hmm. to be able to help us manage that wait list. And so we don't go in order, and we're able to process when people apply for services, especially if they send us two inquiries, and we'll find them. And we've been able to get people in fairly soon compared to what we were. Now sure. a person could probably get in a month or two.
Okay. My last question for you, Kathy, is simply this, you know, kind of, do you have any expectations for the next year? You know, kind of what do you think might happen both for you, but also just in for the industry in general over the next year or so?
Well, it'll be very exciting to see, you know, what happens with, I don't know how close we are to it being descheduled, you know, delisted from a scheduled one mm-hmm. to a scheduled three, you know, whether that's going to be 2, 3, 4 years out. I don't know what that's going to be. But that'll be an interesting little dynamic to see how that might play out.
Sure.
Otherwise, I would say I'm optimistic. We're going to keep on focusing on really good service, keep on expanding, offering retreats, focus on our individual services and the things that we're really good at. And I think that we'll hopefully be here to say hi next year.
Well, I always appreciate talking with you. We have been speaking with Kathy Jonas. She's the founder, CEO, and lead facilitator at Epic Healing Eugene. Kathy, as always, thanks so much.
Oh, a pleasure.
More than 20 people have been sickened by poisoned shellfish, which has led to a coastwide ban. We'll get an update on this issue from the ODFW. As of now, no one is allowed to harvest shellfish anywhere on the Oregon coast due to toxic levels of poison. To hear the latest on this, we speak with ODFW. Michelle Dennehy, spokesperson for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, why don't you kind of give us an overview? I think a lot of us have seen stories in the local press and even national press now about the health risks associated with shellfish harvesting along the Oregon coast.
Sure. So there's a few naturally occurring biotoxins that occur on the coast and can affect shellfish. So the Oregon Department of Agriculture regularly test for these. So shellfish closures are nothing new. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing this time is just the levels of paralytic shellfish poisoning, which is PSP.
Okay.
We've seen them rising in various shellfish species over the past few weeks and kind of higher levels than usual. Again, it's a natural marine biotoxin that's produced by subspecies of microscopic algae. And does impact different species of shellfish differently. For example, what we see is that mussels tend to pick it up really quickly but then expel it quickly, whereas the process is slower for razor clams.
Okay.
But we, beginning in May, we began to see mussel closures as we saw those levels rising. Unfortunately, we at least 20 people, more than 20 people were also sickened by PSP. We have a closure coast-wide for all species of clams. So that's razor clams, bay clams, and that includes cockles, little necks, all clams.
Okay.
And then the mussels are also closed along the entire coast. We're also recommending that people eviscerate crabs. The meat in endogenous crab doesn't really accumulate PSP. It's more in the guts. So you're basically getting rid of the guts.
I see. Okay.
And
okay.
We have some information online about eviscerating king crab.
Do you have any idea of, like, does this happen every year? Is it something that maybe happens every few years? Is it something that happens, but perhaps the level of toxicity in the environment isn't such that you have to close the whole coast down for harvesting?
So I've been with ODFW for almost 18 years, mm-hmm. and I don't recall a coastwide closure like this, but there's often closures. So, you know, closures for domoic acid, for example, those are common. Mm-hmm. We see those all the time, but this seems to be, you know, bigger than usual.
In terms of when it might be safe to harvest shellfish, people should be paying attention to media reports or paying attention to the websites of the Oregon Department of Agriculture in terms of when it might be safe to resume harvesting. Is that what your read is on this?
Correct. So Oregon Department of Agriculture, they actually have a shellfish biotoxin hotline, and you should always call this hotline or mm-hmm. check their website before you crab or clam.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's standard. We have that advice all the time. That number is 1-800-448-2474. And if you just search for shellfish closures, ODA, you will find their website. The information is available in several languages, not mm-hmm. just English. So, you know, it's really, really critical information. And we're always reminding people, hey, you've got to call that hotline or check the website before you go, because it's sure. really, really important. And I think, obviously, this is showing how important it is because people were sickened.
Well, Michelle Dennehy, a spokesperson for ODFW, really appreciate you coming on and giving this that good information. And again, know before you go is always kind of a good piece of information.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And thanks for getting the word out on this.
Sure thing. That's our show for today. In case you missed any of this or any episodes of Oregon on the Record, all the shows are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Monday, you'll hear a special Oregon on the Record, while I'll be joining with other community members to rappel off the Hyatt Hotel at Oakway Center as part of CASA of Lane County's Over the Edge event. I'll bring you the highs and lows of my experience, and hopefully even some video as well. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.